The Happy Warrior Podcast. Conservative commentary on the news of the day from a more positive perspective.
Hey guys, great to be here with all of you. This is the Happy Warrior Podcast, episode 62, with your host, Happy Warrior Pete. It's great to be here with all of you guys again. It's hard to believe we are at 62 episodes. This thing keeps on growing. We're hoping to do a special next week with our good friend, Professor Wilfred Riley, and I can't tease you exactly what it's about just yet, but it might be something pretty epic, so please look forward to that. In today's episode, we are going to go through Silicon Valley social media censorship. In particular, we will be going over the new Facebook oversight board announcement, why it matters. I think a lot of free speech activists and conservatives are worried about this for the wrong reason, and we will go into that here. Plus, we might talk a little bit about the COVID opening and some other things that are of interest to moi. Before we go ahead with all of that, first correction from last week, I accidentally said that Flynn had connections to the Saudis. He had connections to the Turks. I get him and to Rex Tillerson, who was the first Secretary of State for Donald Trump, mixed up sometimes in their connections to other world organizations that people don't really like. So that's my bad. It's in the back of my mind all week that I got that wrong. And so I wanted to come here at the beginning of this episode and apologize for my mistake. Otherwise, I'm pretty happy with where that story is going. Though I've said it a thousand times, I'm not a fan of the Trumpster, but I gotta give the guy credit at times. And this is one of those times. Last week, I was in the dumps when I recorded the episode because I thought what now is known as Obamagate, most Americans would never hear about. Well, I think we're probably at the 50% margin. I think maybe half the country knows this. That's way more than I thought ever would find out. And that largely has to do with the Trumpster. And the Trumpster, in the face of the media, not willing to report on this at all, that he just dug down and spent like a week practically just on this one topic. And he kind of forced the media, the mainstream media, to have to report on what he was tweeting about. And thus, this conversation was put out into the open. Now, of course, like the mainstream media hasn't talked about it a ton. You're not going to hear much about it on CBS or ABC. But it's still more than it was. And Obamagate even got trending on Twitter for a couple days. So I got to say that while I miss the solemnity of George W. and other Republican presidents, for this time, I got to give the Trumpster credit. Now that I've given my requisite Trump praise, we should move on to someone that does not earn praise this week, and it is Mark Zuckerberg. Now listen, I have been gone out on a limb for Mark Zuckerberg a couple times now on this podcast. Last fall, we dedicated an episode to his Georgetown speech. I want to believe that Mark Zuckerberg understands the value of freedom of speech. That speech he gave at Georgetown was very powerful. He said all the right things. He seemed to put forth an understanding of why political speech is important to defend against. He seemed to get political speech, freedom of speech. Those are important things to protect. Whoever that guy was last fall at Georgetown is not the same guy that's with us now and is leading the organization known as Facebook. And Facebook does not get any praise this week. They get a whole heap of hard criticism. So why am I so angry at Facebook, and why you probably should be kind of angry too? Facebook just announced its new oversight board, colloquially known as the Supreme Court of Facebook. Now, this is a project that Zuckerberg and team have been in the making for 3 years now. And the idea for the Facebook Supreme Court is essentially that Facebook wants a higher authority it can appeal to when determining the borderlines between hate speech, free speech, dangerous speech like the Christchurch shooter, and, you know, Uncle Bob's MAGA post that shows up on your newsfeed once a week. Facebook is tired of people complaining about Facebook. And so they wanted to have the Supreme Court of Facebook they could turn to that could take the blame, determine what speech is okay or not, and then Facebook is out of the clear. Now, for a plan like a Supreme Court of Facebook, what were some of the things you would need going into it? Well, consider the analogy it is being designed after, the United States Supreme Court. In the modern era, for the last 120 years, it would be fair to say that the Supreme Court's decisions are largely made up of the people that are on the court and their own ideologies. And the right usually puts forth people who end up being more originalist, which means that's the actual idea for the Constitution and the Supreme Court was, we just interpret the dang thing, we don't determine policy for the rest of the country. Whereas the progressives, especially during the Woodrow Wilson administration, and that's where a lot of this stuff began, would put forth progressives, which read imaginary writings in the penumbras of the Constitution and would determine policy for the rest of the country from the Supreme Court bench. So a project like Facebook would determine on who is in this Supreme Court of Facebook, who's going to be on the oversight board, and their political leanings, their views on free speech and technology, their views on social media and its influence on society, where those particulars are at of those persons on the board matters quite a great deal for a project like this. And this matters a ton because unlike the U.S. Supreme Court, who is protecting a constitution and interpreting therefrom, what is a Supreme Court of Facebook interpreting from? Well, Facebook itself, which hardly means anything, right? So the policy, the political agendas of the people on the board matter an extreme amount for any project like this. So this leads to the natural question, who exactly has Facebook put on this new oversight board? Well, it should not surprise you at the least that a company out of the Silicon Valley has decided to pick people that are largely progressives and people who do not have the nicest and most freedom-loving views when it comes to speech. This project will, at the end, have 40 board members. And the 40 board members are picked by the four co-chairs. Right now, only 20 have been announced, but we do know who the four co-chairs are. And it should not surprise you that of the four co-chairs on the board, only one of them is not a progressive. And the one that's not a progressive is co-chair constitutional law scholar Michael McConnell. And Michael McConnell has very strong ties to the Silicon Valley. His law firm represents a lot of the big corporations down there. Now, of the 20 members that have so far been announced, only two out of the 20 could be considered non-progressives in the group. The first one, of course, is co-chair Michael McConnell. The second is John Samples, who's a vice president over at the wonderful libertarian-minded Cato Institute. And that, my friends, is it. 18 out of 20 of the members announced so far are hardline progressives. Now, a lot of people have noticed this and are very unhappy with it, including FCC Commissioner Brendan Carr, who said on Twitter, he said, "Meet your new speech police. Facebook now has an oversight board empowered to take down posts. So it's gotta be nonpartisan people, right?" Nope. The first is Pam Karlan. She testified to impeach the President of the United States, made a joke making fun of Barron Trump, worked for the Obama DOJ, and the New York Times called her the full-throated, unapologetic, liberal torchbearer. This is just one of these 20 members. The next person to take Carr's notice is former Guardian editor Alan Rusbridger. Now, Alan Rusbridger, he headed the Guardian newspaper, which is a left-wing UK newspaper, but he is on the record several times in asking that the president's coronavirus briefings be taken off air and has rooted openly for President Trump's removal from office. This kind of anti-Trump bias is pretty apparent in many of the picks. Another one is Nicholas Suzor. Nicholas Suzor is on the record of not being a fan of Trump and even shared an article he said he loved that compared President Trump to Adolf Hitler.
The next one Brendan Carr noted was an honest-to-gosh George Soros Open Society member. I know, that almost sounds conspiratorial saying that. Her name is Afia Asantewa Asari Kayi, and she was a program manager at the Open Society Initiative for West Africa. Kayi is on the record saying really ugly things about conservatives and MAGA people and Trump in general. Brendan Carr in his tweet point out this one saying, quote, "I think that Donald Trump is the jewel in the crown of the far right, fascist, xenophobic, right-wing groups that exist." I could go on with specifics, but, you know, just a couple more. Evelyn Oswald, she was the director of human rights in the Hillary Clinton State Department. There's also a former prime minister of Denmark for the left-wing Social Democrat Party, which is Helle Thorning-Schmidt. Another of the board members was an aide to Senator Kamala Harris. Now, we could go on and on about the specifics of each of the members and their own biases, but we would be here all day and it would miss the point completely. But I will say this about the political and ideological biases of the Oversight Board. This project and its makeup shouldn't surprise us too much. The guy that came up with the idea of the Oversight Board for Facebook is a guy by the name of Noah Feldman. He is a Harvard law professor and was one of the legal experts that was an expert witness for the Democrats during the recent Trump impeachment hearings. The board was also helped developed by a kind of infamous progressive nonprofit, BSR. So a project that was created by someone that was an expert witness at the Trump impeachment hearings that worked with a progressive nonprofit hand in hand and worked with a company staffed by progressive leaders and many progressive, if not outright socialist employees, that we get a board that has this kind of makeup. And I should say that this makeup of the board is completely on purpose. And many of the documents include in the announcement by Facebook, they go into great detail how they went to extreme lengths to make sure that they had an equal amount of male and female board members. They then go on to talk about how they had to have a certain amount of people from each region of the globe. That they made sure when picking these people that they had the right ideas, ideology, came from the right place, and had the right gender and sex. This should tell you that if they were paying attention this hard to make sure every little detail of each board member was put there to fit their overarching goal, their overarching plan for this organization, then it shouldn't surprise us that they also made sure that the members of this group had the kind of ideology about speech and about Facebook that would fit well there. Now, that doesn't mean that all these people love Facebook. Many of them have been overt critics. Even the Open Society activist announced there, her specialty for Open Society was to push for limited free speech in Western Africa, which would be more speech than they have there. So the people they picked are, some of them are people that would be the kind of people you would think of if you were looking for progressive activists on the issue of free speech. However, the makeup of the board is decidedly a 1-to-9 ratio of non-progressives to progressives. And so if you are a conservative or a free speech activist and you're worried because the progressives have become the ideological movement over the last few years, pushing for more and more censorship of speech, because there's this idea that popped up and that has been imbibed in especially in academia, but also in the media somewhat, is that bad speech equals violence. And it's a weak argument, but they do buy into it. But basically it goes, speech can make people anxious, which can cause health problems. Ergo, if you say something and it hurts another person's feelings or gives them anxiety, you are hurting that person with your speech. Ergo, speech can equal violence. Therefore, to protect the people who might be hurt by the mean words that would harm their lives, we have to stop people from being able to speak, or if they speak, that no one can hear it. And unfortunately, this idea has been imbibed in way too much of the left-wing tribe of the United States and the Western world. And you find a lot of these kind of ideas found in this group of people. So yeah, if you are a free speech activist, you would be worried about the makeup of this board. If you are conservative and you're worried that Facebook is going to dig in deep to help Democrats and the left and to win elections and to have influence in society, those are completely legit fears. I have some of them. I get it. But even after going through the makeup of the sport, how they put this thing together, who was the guy that came up with this idea? I have to say that really all this paying attention to the oversight board itself is, in the end, to be completely honest with you, dear listener, a waste of time. And I can prove this by three things. Firstly, let's look at the charter of the organization. According to its own reasoning for having the organization and its power, this board, this group, will pick cases for what Facebook recommends and what they choose. They will make a decision on it. Then they hand over their decision over to Facebook. Now, Facebook can agree to it or not. Facebook will be allowed to have ultimate policy-making decision power. And even if Facebook does abide by what they say, it doesn't matter because Facebook has control of what really matters, the algorithms. As I've tried to warn you guys before, what you post is nowhere near as important as who's allowed to see it. It's this idea called the digital ghetto, which comes from the original term of the ghetto during World War II, which is a really gross thing, but was this idea that it was not just a way to keep people in one place, to make it so people outside the ghetto could not see it. The digital ghetto is things like shadow banning. It's, yeah, you can have 10,000 Twitter followers, but you tweet it out, none of those followers or very few of them will be able to see it, as I can personally attest to having experienced, which is very, very frustrating, I might add. The algorithm control is still in Facebook's corner. And according to their own documents, and you dig down deep to find this bit, but there will be something called a compliance report. And basically, the Facebook independent group, the oversight board, yeah, they can make a ruling on a case and hand it to Facebook. But it's really up to Facebook at that point if they're going to obey it or not. And that they have to release a compliance report basically says that, Facebook, if you don't do what we want, if you don't do like we want you to do, Facebook, we're going to complain about it in our specialty report. And oh boy, Facebook, you'll be scared now. Yeah, it's silly, right? It's silly. So no, this is reason number one from its own documents. This is not really a legit enterprise. Reason number two is what this Facebook Oversight Board is supposed to do. Okay, the Facebook Oversight Board is not meant to be a Supreme Court. Reason number two, the Oversight Board is not legit, but it is still completely something to worry about, is that Facebook Oversight Board is not a court. It is a shield to be used in court. What do I mean? Well, Facebook, since 2016, has been hated by people in the U.S., and the rest of North America a ton. And that is completely legitimate. But you guys gotta understand, to Facebook, America is small beans. We make up, Canada and the US together make up about 9% of Facebook's total audience. Facebook has 3 billion daily users. 3 billion daily users use Facebook, WhatsApp, Instagram, Snapchat. They use one of those. 3 billion people every single day. The biggest country that uses Facebook is India, where they have 900 million users, 3 times as many users as they have in the U.S. Here's the thing, though. As harsh as the United States has been to Facebook, and every now and then we'll charge them a couple billion, like the FCC just charged them $5 billion for a privacy scandal. And really, to Facebook, that is small change. Facebook compared to what it possibly could have been. But the rest of the world have been entirely harsh on Facebook. When something goes wrong, Facebook is the one that gets blamed. Look at the story like with the Rohingya Muslims. Back in 2016, the Rohingya Muslims are being slaughtered en masse by Buddhists in Myanmar. Who gets blamed for it in the international press? By Myanmar itself? Facebook does. Facebook cops to it, pays a big amount, says, we will change our ways and we will prevent hate speech and things from transferring. Or to a more recent scandal, look at an Indian massacre. India is growing day by day, more nationalistic in its feelings about religion and ethnicity. And this has led to terrible, terrible violence by its Hindu majority. Now, when they had a scandal where the Hindu majority used WhatsApp, then guess who got the blame? Not really the Hindus so much as Facebook. Yes, Facebook got the blame for what happened. Just last week, Facebook apologized to Sri Lanka for a similar thing that happened because one of Facebook's apps was the communications piece that was used that led to ultimate violence. Now, stories like this, Rohingya in Myanmar, Hindus in India killing religious minorities, stories like this can be found on every continent almost across the world, not really North America, but we have incidents that we like to blame on Facebook. Some mass shootings have been blamed on Facebook. And of course, elections have been blamed on Facebook. So Facebook has faced a lot of hate and has had to pay the bills a lot of times. But it's not only that. It's not only violent episodes that Facebook has to deal with. Facebook is facing, in each of these nations, a desire for that nation and the bodies that represent them to control the speech, to censor speech, and even to censor the rest of the world's speech. And so what we have is Facebook having to pay and cave to each individual country, and after doing so, censoring not just that country's population's rights to free speech, access to free speech, but censoring the rest of the world's too. A couple examples. In Europe, the EU Court of Justice ruled last year that Facebook would be liable for any defamatory material and would have to delete it no matter where the world it was posted. And this came out of a case where an Austrian politician faced mean comments online and sued. It made its way up the brackets and eventually to the EU Court of Justice. In 2019, France ruled that Facebook must hand over any information about a hate speech suspect. Again, it doesn't really matter where in the world they are, but if the cops think this person has committed hate speech, and again, hate speech is in the eyes of the beholder, it's a totally subjective term, they would have to hand it over. And as far as I can tell, Facebook agreed to this one too. In what is probably the most disgusting of these cases I'll bring to note, just this last year, Vietnam told Facebook flat out. It didn't even say, there are people who are being mean to one of our politicians online. No, it just said, Facebook, we think that you aren't helping out enough with state censorship. So Facebook, if you want to stay, you need to help us stop censorship and report on those that are saying things that we, the Vietnam Communist state, do not like. And here's the most gross detail in this episode. Facebook agreed to that too. Yeah. Facebook agreed to help out a communist state in Southeast Asia to helping rat out its own people. Yikes. That is just reprehensible. That is really deplorable. But Facebook agreed to it because Facebook, they really feel that their job first and foremost is a business and they really wouldn't like to lose audience. They did it once for China and it's something I think they kind of regret a little bit. So why does Facebook want an oversight board in the face of everyone bickering and complaining and trying to, you know, sue Facebook? Well, you know how we all say that we use Facebook and we don't like it? Well, guess what? Facebook really doesn't like us more than we dislike it. In Facebook's world, they would really like it if they just did not have to deal with so many problems. And it's hard to blame them. Facebook wishes that it would not have to figure out 100 different free speech policies for 100 different nations, and then have to do that in 500 or more different languages. It is a really pain in the butt to do so. As we talked about in my podcast last year, I think it was about a year ago exactly, we went through a report by The Verge about this moderation company that Facebook had hired to do some moderation. It ended up giving a lot of people some really bad PTSD, and people were getting paid less than $30,000, and they had these tiny breaks. It was just an insane, insane job. Many of the details were definitely NSFW, so we're not going to go into that here. But Facebook has tried doing moderation en masse, and moderation by person is really expensive. The algorithms can't quite cut it, and so they tried doing it with people, and that didn't really work either because it's really expensive. And so to have the kind of moderation force they would need to meet the needs of each and every country is just, it's not something they would like to have to do. In Facebook's world, they would like it if they did not have to deal with, instead of 500 different policies for speech, that they instead would have one. That is the ideal. Facebook, you got one speech policy. You don't have to keep catering to each of these individual nations. You just have the one policy, and thus you have a heck of a lot less time in court. Now, for me as a free speech advocate, this concerns me greatly that Facebook would decide to try to find the lowest common version of freedom of speech instead of fighting for the highest. But from a business sense, purely business sense, this makes sense. And if you look at this from the business sense and Facebook's desire to have this one speech policy, an oversight board is a really great idea because it means that you can use this thing as a shield. So the next time it has to deal with France or the EU, and they say, well, you're not doing enough, Facebook, to prevent hate speech from being here. You're not doing enough, Facebook, to protect people from being comments online. And Facebook says, you're right, but we're getting help. You know, it's like the guy in court who's in there for a drug addiction or alcoholism says, you know, I'm getting therapy. Yeah, I hit someone in a drunk driving accident, but I'm getting help. And the judge might go more lenient on them. That is what the oversight board really is there to do. The oversight board really isn't to set a new Supreme Court. It's not really there to do what they're saying it's there to do. It's there to prevent Facebook from having to deal with politicians and governments and lawyers, or at least have much less of that. The oversight board is also very helpful when it comes to dealing with political problems back in its home turf. A New York Times report just came out that talked about Mark Zuckerberg after 2016 and 2017 realizing that he would have to invest much political will and time to dealing with Washington, D.C. He had people that were top lobbyists. Facebook is now, I think, the third top money spender on lobbying in D.C., according to this New York Times report. And he even tried to become friends with Jared Kushner. He met with President Trump, and President Trump, it seems to have worked because President Trump doesn't criticize Facebook like he used to. And this oversight board speaks to their desire to have something to break the political will. Now, in the United States, because we are in the middle of a culture war, and the culture war has decided the most idiotic things, that we on the right are for free speech and we on the left are against it. It's a ridiculous notion, but that kind of seems to be where we are politically. And so the Republicans will be mad about Silicon Valley and want social media to allow free speech. And the left, maybe they'll get mad at Silicon Valley, but they'll be mad at Silicon Valley for not censoring more speech that they find problematic. And so it's really difficult to get the political will in the United States to go after Facebook when it does something illegal, when it has a privacy scandal, when Facebook ultimately screws up, like with Cambridge Analytica. And so the FCC, when Facebook got in big trouble for a major privacy scandal, ended up only paying $5 billion. And this took a lot of political will to make it happen. Okay? Last year, Mark Zuckerberg met with Congress, and it was embarrassing. If you have some time, look up embarrassing funny questions at Mark Zuckerberg Congress. It is hilarious, some of the stuff that are asked. But it just goes to show that it is really hard to make any political will happen that Congress or the president or the FCC, you know, any of these government institutions, whether they're an executive agency or they're the politicians themselves, to take Facebook to task. It is so difficult to get that political will together, to get people who actually know what the fetch they're talking about, and then to take that political will and those people who know what they're talking about and go to Facebook and make a case and get Facebook to answer to misdeeds that they have committed. Really difficult to make it happen. And this is why they have the oversight board. It is a shield. It's a shield meant to stop not just complaining from world governments and politicians, but from American politicians. It's meant to protect Facebook from American politics. They know that it is difficult to put together the will to go after Facebook. They know that Facebook, although it is very unpopular in D.C., in truth, these people don't really know anything about it. And they don't think that Facebook is something they can really go after and it'll work in their political plans and make them very popular. So they just don't try. Even Senator Hawley, Josh Hawley, who makes a big stink about Facebook, but what can we point to that he's made in policy for all his complaining and pointing out legitimate problems with Silicon Valley internet companies? Exactly. You can't point to any. So quick review. Reason one, I don't believe Facebook Oversight Board is a legitimate Supreme Court of Facebook is because of the design, the charter, what Facebook has actually announced about this thing. Reason two is that Facebook political leanings, how it wants to deal with stuff, shows that Facebook isn't really in the mood for real reform. It just kind of wants to brush away concerns. And the last reason, and maybe it's the most important, is the human element. A wonderful piece by the New York Times just came out about Mark Zuckerberg. And it basically goes to show that Mark Zuckerberg has gone out of his way over the last few years to consolidate power at Facebook. He is now calling himself the wartime leader. He has restructured his board, kicked out longtime members, so they're basically a bunch of yes men. Even the famous Sheryl Sandberg's power has been somewhat let go of. So, yeah, Mark Zuckerberg, this does not sound like a guy that's in the mood to share power. Mark Zuckerberg has dedicated now years to gaining control of Facebook. He even kicked out the creators of Instagram and Snapchat and put in his own loyalists in those places. Mark Zuckerberg is not in the mood to share power. Okay, that's just the truth of it. Okay, Marky, I really wanted to believe you understood the value of free speech and political speech, and maybe you do, but you just don't have the strength or the stamina, whatever it is, to stand up to the rest of the people in your organization who want you to ban political ads or to put fact checks on them. Okay, you just don't seem to have the strength to it. It's either you are sincere and you're weak, or you just don't care, and all of this has been hot air. And I feel embarrassed that I ever wasted my time or my audience's time pointing them to that wonderful speech that you gave last fall. This human element, the Mark Zuckerberg, the Caesar Zuck, that part shows me that I have a hard time believing that the man that kicks out the founders of Instagram and Snapchat is in the mood to share power with an independent oversight board. It doesn't make sense. So, my good audience, what you should take away from this is the oversight board is a problem whether it's legit or not. Now, it's likely not legit, but if it's legit, this thing is heavy with progressives and people who don't have the nicest feelings about free speech. And it is precisely the progressive worldview that is part of the reason why we are getting so much censorial things happening at Facebook and on the internet today. So that should not give you much hope in this oversight board. But putting that aside, even if this isn't legitimate, this thing is a threat. And I think a lot of writers that I respect that talk about Silicon Valley haven't really made this to people. They haven't made clear why the oversight board is a problem, because it is a shield to prevent any kind of reform coming from the outside pushing against Facebook. Now, my personal views about Facebook is I don't think Congress should get involved too heavily in Facebook. I think Congress should have the threat of getting involved over them. And so Facebook, look, we're going to push the 501 stuff. Say, hey, Facebook, you're either a publisher or a platform. You know, that's the kind of thing. So where the threat of getting involved tells them that they need to protect freedom of speech, encourage Silicon Valley to adopt their standards of speech to the First Amendment. If it's not illegal, generally, don't block it. Those are my views on it. I'm a libertarian these days, except for on some social issues and maybe on this. I'm a libertarian, but I do understand that this is a threat because Facebook, YouTube, these platforms are the new public square. They are the new places that we air our ideas and arguments. And it is really important that these things are open and free and not taking sides. And what they are doing right now is taking sides. And that could have a deleterious effect on the polity and on the people. It's even bad on our spirits. We need to be allowed to talk freely and to put arguments for each other and against each other open. We need to be able to talk without worrying about that this hammer is going to come down on us. Now, that doesn't mean that you should allow, obviously really bad stuff like pornography or the Christchurch shooter video, maybe. But those things on the outset aside, the vast majority of speech should be in. There's this great, I just read this book by Dave Rubin, Don't Burn This Book, where he talks about this moment. He was with one of his scientist friends at his talk. And in the group comes up this woman, and she says, I am a World War II Holocaust denier. Now, one of two things could have happened there. They could have made fun of her, booed her, kicked her out. That is not what they took. No, instead the guy says, here is why you're wrong. Here is all the evidence. For one, all the evidence points this happened. Two, the Nazis tried to delete records and any evidence of their wrongdoing. And as he put forth these arguments, you could kind of see that maybe she was turning, but you could definitely tell the audience that they were more informed than when they had started. That many people who had already believed this now understood why that belief might be correct. And people who were on the sidelines or who didn't really know much about it were much more aware of where the truth is. Free speech is a tool for knowledge, is a tool for destroying ignorance, is a tool for bringing people up and educating ourselves. It is a tool for good. And we have looked at it too often now as a problem. Now, look, it can get ugly. I admit that. It can get ugly at times, but the ugliness is the cost of all the benefits that free speech can bring us. And the free speech standard that even Canada might have is not where Facebook is heading. They are heading to the free speech views of the EU and down. And trying to go to a common one policy for the world means that they will have the lowest value of speech will get pushed forward. And that doesn't help anyone. Those are my feelings on it. I think people like Jonah Goldberg, where they're worried that if we have major legislation or organization like the FCC get involved with Facebook, that could end up hurting conservatives in the end because conservatives often are on the losing end of these things. I think he's absolutely right. And that's why my view is encourage laws that will punish them if they don't agree to strict free speech standards like the First Amendment, but otherwise stay out of it. That's my stance on it. But the thing is, we can't even have an argument about what to do about Facebook and have it happen if Facebook is just cutting away those dialogues and Facebook is trying to prevent us from getting the will together to go to them and try to have this public conversation between our leaders and Facebook, which is what's happening now, which is why the Oversight Board is so worrisome. The Oversight Board is a way for Facebook so they don't have to deal with the negative consequences of their actions. And I know I have not a positive view of DC and Congress and their ability to handle things. But nothing will never have any kind of recompense happen with acts like this. And so this is why I find the Oversight Board a legitimate concern. If you think that Facebook is wrong on free speech, if you think they're wrong on hate speech, if they're wrong on privacy, if they're wrong on their almost monopoly-like ability to eat things, they just ate Giphy for crying out loud. Facebook's got some splaining to do. And the Oversight Board is one of their attempts to stop it. Censorship from Silicon Valley is a big problem right now. Coronavirus has allowed Google, YouTube, and the others to double down, to triple down, to go 10 times what they were doing with censorship in really scary ways. Like YouTube will just delete video of anti-lockdown researchers, people who are like epidemiologists like Dr. Newt M. Witowski. He got millions of views of the video, but YouTube didn't like it, so they took it down. Or Google taking down search results after bogus copyright claims are put forward. Or Facebook, they just took down a video of the Chicago mayor who said like 2 years ago that she was looking forward to working with a new world order. They said that this was false and took it down, even though the video was legit. And you have things like even now the Twitch News Safety Advisory Council, which is going to be my next article on the topic of Silicon Valley censorship after this Facebook one is published. And that is also another concern. I mean, one, the people that are involved in this, to fair to say to the woman, believe she's a deer. And I know. When I say that, if you're like, what the fetch are you talking about? What do you mean Twitch hired a woman that believes she is a deer? Well, Twitch hired a woman that believes she's a deer to help determine their policies when it comes to speech that's allowed on the platform. So there's a lot going on with the Silicon Valley companies that really should concern all of us, because they are not pushing towards freedom of speech during this time. They're using coronavirus to get worse. Even the flipping Internet Archive's Wayback Machine now has trigger warnings. We'll end here with this story, I think. So the MIT Technology Review, they published this article saying Internet Archive allows people to get around hate speech safety restrictions. Internet Archive's Wayback Machine is allowing mean bad people to read mean bad things. So how does the Internet Archive is amazing. Every reporter, researcher uses it because when people delete tweets, when people change an article or modify it, you can see the original versions. So you can see what happened to it and how it changed. Wayback Machine, it's a historical resource. You can see how the web was in its early days. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing, the Wayback Machine. But it's one of these things in our culture war that nothing is allowed to stay outside of it. And things that should be a norm and that both sides can go to, one of the sides tries to grab it, usually the left, and says, no, 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 this is ours and we set the rules. So then they take something like the Internet Wayback Machine and they memory hole stuff. They delete history. They've already done this with Wikipedia. It's scary. It's the weaponization of norms. And it takes things that should be nonpartisan and makes them partisan, and it hurts all of us by doing it. And I'm concerned because we cannot get any kind of political will together with expertise and to tell these companies, hey, what you're doing is wrong. You know, PragerU and these LGBTQ organizations tried to sue Facebook and take them to court for their shenanigans, and the court sided with YouTube. Did I say Facebook? Whatever. I meant YouTube. All of this scares me because as I see these organizations move further and further to the left, not just in politics and policy and ideas, but in their willingness to what they're willing to do. They aren't as scared to just come out and censor Trump tweets now. They aren't as scared to just get rid of a conservative group and just wipe it from the map. They aren't as scared to mess with freedom of speech. Now, I am on the right side of the spectrum, so of course the stuff that affects my side bothers me more. But this is a dangerous stance to take because progressives, listen to me, it's on your side today, but you set these things up. And one day, if that thing turns evil in a way that we both agree is evil, then that's it, man. That's it. Who are you going to appeal to deal with it then? So we cannot allow these cages, these gilded cages, these digital cages to be built up around us. And I don't know what is an actual possible solution to go ahead and say, hey, wait a second, Facebook. Do not be selling everybody's information without permission. Do not be trying to get involved in election deciding either which way. Please allow freedom of speech. Stop trying to pick sides on these things. You know, pick the side of liberty and freedom instead of the side of Vietnam. All these are legit. You know, stop eating every company that's digital. All these things are legitimate concerns for people on both sides, but there's nothing we really can do about it because we can't get the private will together. We can't get the political will together. And the oversight board is this genius way to just swat what little stuff we can put together. Now, you have all like antitrust suits coming towards Google right now, and maybe those make a difference. But I sincerely have my doubts. And again, as your good journalist friend, my job is to explain the problems. I can advocate solutions, but that's not really the job. when you go into that territory, that's more activist. And I've worn that hat, especially with chronic pain and some other stuff, but that's not my job. So I don't know what the solution is to something like a YouTube, to a Facebook, to a Twitter, to a Twitch. I don't. But what I do know is these things are increasingly looking like they're going to go down dark paths. And once we've gone down them, it will be very hard to regain that ground. Okay, so on that happy note, I think we'll end it here. Next week, we'll have Professor Riley here, and hopefully we'll have something really cool to announce and do a newsworthy thing with you guys, but even not. I'm hoping Professor Riley would just be willing to shoot the breeze again. I love Professor Riley. He is the smartest man I've ever met. Just such a cool guy. I really do appreciate the man a lot. You know, he's just the kind of intelligent guy that I wish I could be. And I know I never could. He just has an ability with facts and figures that I just don't. So I'm excited to bring him on again. It's been 2 months or so. We had him at the beginning of this coronavirus thing. It'll be nice to have him back. Anything else that we really need to say? Of course, please rate and review this on iTunes, share this link to this thing on whatever social media platform you enjoy. Tell your friends and family about the podcast. Our Twitter is at Happy Warrior P. Facebook is at Happy Warrior Pete, and mine's is at Happy Warrior Pete as well. Of course, you can check us out on the YouTube channel. We'll be getting stuff back on that again very soon. And of course, my articles with the Postmillennial and elsewhere. So there's a lot for you to take in for the Happy Warrior podcast and its growing, its small but growing media empire. Well, we are going to end it here, guys. I appreciate all your thoughts and your prayers. You know, the country is reopening for realsies. It's like the vast majority of the country, at least landmass-wise, is already opened. So we're going to get out of this thing. It's tough, and we're probably stuck with this virus forever. But, you know, as a country, we will get through this. We will work hard and get our economy back up to snuff, and life will improve. Because, you know, this is the United States of America. Dang it. And this is the best frickin' country on planet Earth. And with God's help, hard work, and humility, we can do anything. This has been the Happy Warrior Podcast with your friend, Happy Warrior Pete. And until next time, my good friends, good night, America.
Thank you for listening. The Happy Warrior Podcast, hosted by Peter Von Pischke, produced by Robert Mayling, a production of the Sioux Empire Podcast Network. Learn more at happy-warrior.net. A production of the SiouxEmpire.com.